Magic the Gathering players, Magic the Gathering players, that is time in the round, that is time in the round. Magic the Gathering players, that is time in the round.
I'm struggling to find a standard deck that I really love right now. I find a lot of decks that are really cool and that I find very interesting. I spoke a bit about this repurposing pod Dimir Artifacts deck, and I do find it really cool. It doesn't play very well, and I find that in this meta where there's a lot of artifact removal and there's a lot of artifact hate, it just dies. And I'm not able to execute the deck in a way that I want to. And I end up finding myself sitting there having my Simulacrum Synthesizer removed for the third time, going, I can't do anything. I'm just sitting here doing nothing, twiddling my thumbs.
The deck I would play if I was playing just for the joy of playing, as opposed to like playing for any sort of competitive edge, is Mono White Caretaker. I love that deck so much. It infuriates me that it's bad. It does all the things I love in a grindy deck. I know I say this every time I talk about Mono White Caretaker, but it reminds me a lot of the old Modern Goblins deck that was... Because when you think Modern Goblins, you think aggressive, right? You think like Goblin Bushwhacker, Goblin Guide, like that sort of flavor of deck. It was a hard control deck.
Mm.
It was incredibly, incredibly cool because what it was doing is it was designed to beat these other control decks because Goblin Ringleader was a 4-mana 2/2 haste that drew you 4 cards.
Ew.
Yeah, no, it was sick. It was so cool. You had Aether of Isle to play around counter spells. You were playing for Cavern of Souls. Like, the deck was really, really exciting. And then it took a different turn and turned into a combo deck because of a Conspicuous Snoop. But Mono White Caretaker feels similar to me to that original Modern Goblins list that is using slower card draw engines and a creature-based, like, gum up the ground, gain a bunch of life, try to get the maximum value out of Bazaar and Fountain Ports. That sort of, like, grindy, very powerful card drawy gameplay is something I have such a profound affinity for. If I had to sleeve up any deck to play, like, the most casual no-stakes events, I would be playing Caretaker.
We haven't had any standard bans in a really long time.
No, ma'am, we have not.
I saw an interesting thing pop up on my feed the other day where there was some, I want to put like 6 quote unquotes around the word speculation here, because I don't really think it was much speculation. I think it was just a bit of a expressing frustration with the format as it is. And I'm going to quickly also just say I don't think there's much wrong with the meta as it is. I think this is the healthiest standard meta has been in a while, just in terms of deck diversity. The 3 most played decks at Aetherdrift aside dominating in terms of overall playability, but the rest of the field being somewhat diverse, I think, speaks to the health of the format.
Having 3 tier 1 decks is a good thing.
There's always going to be a best deck. At least it's not 1 tier 1 deck.
At least there isn't a clear best deck. At least each tier 1 deck has really significant elements of counterplay that you can build into. I actually think the standard format is... I mean, look, biased. I am obviously biased.
Biased opinion alert.
I think this standard format is still awesome.
Yeah.
I think the prevalence of Overlords pushes aggressive decks up. I think aggressive decks push Overlord out of the format, which leaves room for the like mid-range decks. I think... if you want to enjoy this format, this format is a really good exercise in trying to read where the meta is.
If you could guess 3 cards that people would like to see banned, what do you think those 3 cards would be?
Monstrous Rage, Up the Beanstalk. What would the last one be? I don't even know. What's the other deck?
Manifold Mouse. I saw...
You reckon?
So, but no, not me.
Sure.
If I had to guess, I would pick Monstrous Rage and Up the Beanstalk for sure. I think Up the Beanstalk, easy. Easy if we had to discuss at the most hypothetical of hypotheticals, I think Up the Beanstalk would be up for discussion.
Yes, I would. I would like to clarify now that I actually don't think there should be any standard bannings.
Yeah. Disclaimer. I don't think there should be any bans in standard currently. I think where we are is fine. And looking back historically on cards that were banned in standard, most recently, let's look back to Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. The three cards that were banned were Invoke Despair, Fable of the Mirror Breaker, and Reckoner Bankbuster. And these were three monumentally powerful and impactful cards, and led to a metagame where there really was one good deck. And its existence was stifling. Rakdos was so good in standard. It was the best deck. It was practically the only deck you should be playing at the time. And Reckoner Bankbuster being a colorless card draw engine that could slot into literally any deck that provided a 4-4 body and, you know, card advantage plus treasure plus pilot when you removed the last charge counter for it. It was too good. Invoke Despair as well being too good for black. Being able to target creatures, enchantments, and planeswalkers typically while dealing up to 9 damage. 9, was it 2 or 3 life per thing? Some amount of extravagant life plus drawing cards. Again, too good. Fable of the Mirror Breaker then being able to capitalize off of cards in red-black that were already fantastic through the reverse side while also generating card advantage through the second chapter of Fable. It was too much.
Well, Fable of the Mirror Breaker specifically, it's worth saying, is probably one of the most powerful mid-range cards ever printed.
It's an amazing card, and
Standard aside, it sees play in every format that isn't vintage.
And it's no surprise that these three cards got banned. But looking at those cards compared to, let's say, Monstrous Rage, Up the Beanstalk, and Manifold Mouse, they're nowhere near what I would consider the same power level or the same threat level, let's say.
Or the same ubiquity, which I think is really important.
That's the other thing, too, is that these three cards, being Invoke Despair, Bankbuster, and Fable, were so widely played. I think they each were at over 50% in the standard meta. And 50% seems to be that back-breaking point for when cards get banned. The One Ring in Modern passed, I think, 60% inclusion before it was banned, but when it was approaching 50, it was up for discussion, and we can all agree it was a little bit too late. And Nadu as well, when it hit that ubiquitous 50% inclusion or 50% representation across the meta, Bird got cooked.
I think deck should be banned before the 50% mark, but that is a discussion about ban philosophy that is...
For a different episode.
For a different episode and not something that I personally am an expert in. I don't think anything should get banned.
I don't think we're due for standard bans.
None of the decks are egregious. None of the play patterns are really egregious. I think the Leyline of Resonance banning in Best of One is good.
Yes.
I think that is really... It feels to me like a Tybalt's Trickery ban, in the sense that it's not banned because the raw thing it's doing is so powerful, but because it leads to game, at least to low agency gameplay, leads to gameplay where your win or your loss is so heavily dependent on the existence of one card or on the execution of like one thing that it was generating unfun play patterns in a best of one environment. But having it obviously not banned in best of three, where there's a lot more interaction, I think makes a lot of sense. There does not strike me as a similarly either like destructive deck in terms of play pattern or a similarly powerful card to something like Fable of the Mirror Breaker in standard at the moment. Beans, I think, is the closest thing to deserving a ban, but I think it's a 2-mana enchantment that draws a card.
The other thing, too, about these cards being Monstrous Rage, Up the Beanstalk, and Manifold Mouse is that they're so color restrictive and they're so archetype restrictive as well. Your Jeskai Oculus deck, while playing red, is not playing Manifold Mouse, nor is it playing Monstrous Rage. Your Gruul aggro deck, while green, is not playing Up the Beanstalk. These cards have such specific homes in such specific archetypes as to make them not ubiquitous.
And archetypes that have an abundance of counterplay, which I think is the really important differentiation here. when Black Red was as good as it was in Standard, there was no real way to beat it. There was no, like, you could play a deck that was substantially worse that had a good Black Red matchup, but you lost to everything else and it just wasn't worth it. There isn't, that dynamic doesn't exist in this current format because the big three decks keep each other in check and because there is such an immense diversity in the, like, tier two, tier three decks.
The tier two and tier three, I think, are some of the most important levels of a metagame. The decks that are not necessarily the best of the best, but can go up against them and are kind of constantly shuffling over the top of one another in terms of their overall effectiveness. Selesnya Cage is still a good deck. It's not tier one, and it's not tier three. It's somewhere in between tier two and tier three. And it's shuffling around between these other decks as well. Jeskai Oculus, again, kind of somewhere in the middlings around there.
I would call Jeskai Oculus tier 1.5.
Almost there, but not quite.
Not quite.
That's all I've got to say about that, really.
Yeah. I think tier 2 and tier 3 can kind of be seen, and we'll talk about this more on our Reading the Metagame episode, which will come out probably in a few months. Tier 2 and tier 3, in my mind, are more like one amalgamated thing where the decks will shift back and forth in between them according to the metagame as opposed to the raw power of the decks. I think tier 1 is a raw power tier where, you know, there is just at a base level a most powerful thing or a few most powerful things that you can be doing in any given format. And that is kind of where the tier 0, tier 1 exists. In this case, of course, that's Mice, Pixie, Overlords. And then the tier 2, tier 3 sort of exists in this, depending on the prevalence of other tier 2 or tier 3 decks, will shift to capitalize on each other. So it is a lot more amorphous, which is why playing a deck like Mono White Caretaker is never too bad, because they will get to a point where that tier 2, tier 3 almost sub-metagame shifts to a point where Mono White is the best or the second best tier 2 deck again.
You know what we have to start preparing for now?
Modern season?
Tarkir spoilers.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We're less than a month away from Tarkir Dragonstorm.
We've got a few spoilers already.
We've already gotten a few cheeky little spoilers from MagicCon Chicago, but I want more. I demand more spoilers for Tarkir Dragonstorm.
Spoilers.
The story's already started, and it's off to an interesting start, to say in the least, but I want more cards. I want to know what's coming to Standard. Surprise, surprise, as someone who enjoys the format, I want to know what's coming. I want to know what to look out for.
I am also incredibly nostalgic for Tarkir because it was the... I started playing in Theros era, but the first time I was like really engaging with Magic at a store level, playing Friday Night Drafts, getting like really into the game, was in that Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, Dragons of Tarkir, like, in that set block. And so going back and looking at the card design for the spoiled cards, it is just the wave of nostalgia. I don't often buy... Surprising maybe no one, I play mostly on Arena. I'm going to buy so much Tarkir product. Just so much. The nostalgia is too real. I'm going to have a full set. I'm going to frame it. It's going to be...
See, this is so interesting because I, as someone who's a bit newer to the Magic scene, I never got the chance to visit Tarkir when it was the first time we were going there. This, for me, is my first time going to Tarkir, whereas it's your, you know, revisiting the plane. And it's so cool in a way to be, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed going to Tarkir for the first time when this is a lot of players, you know, are going back.
Well, it's the first time we've been here in 10 years, so.
It's huge. It's so exciting. And it's as a newer player, it's a plane with a lot of lore. It's a plane with a lot of that nostalgia feeling. That's where we got, again, our fetches. It's where we're seeing, you know, this three-color identity being... It's where we're seeing three color identities coming back, and we haven't really seen that since Streets of New Capenna, and even then, didn't see too much three color with Streets.
It was also the first time that the three-color shards were introduced that weren't the Alara shards. So it's the first time we heard the words Jeskai, Sultai, Tima, etc., etc.
Which now are, like, mainstays. Everyone generalizing here, but everyone knows those words. Everyone knows Mardu, Jeskai. You're familiar and you've heard them before in some way, shape, or form.
But people don't know where they come from. And they come from Khans, baby. I'm unbelievably excited. I am obviously unimaginably biased, but I think the Khans block, but specifically the set Khans of Tarkia, was a fan favorite for so many playing at the time. And I think it is historically, one of the, like, juiciest lore places, because you have all this cool story surrounding, like, well, I mean, it has dragons, for starters.
Dragon's good. Dragon's cool.
Dragon's cool.
Everybody loves dragons.
But also it has Ugin. It has Nicol Bolas. It has time travel. It has a really interesting and kind of intricate dynamic with the clan identities, which both are and are not coming back, I think. But you also have the, like, positive nostalgia element of you could go to a draft and open a fetch land and your draft was paid for. And you have cards like Siege Rhino, that absolute classic.
And we have seen Skirmish Rhino, which is going to be coming into Standard, which is Siege Rhino's little brother.
It's fine.
Look, at some level, I like that there's a rhino there.
Yeah. Oh, look, I appreciate that they put it in. I appreciate they put an homage to Siege Rhino in.
It's going to be. I need more spoilers. I need more previews. I need to know what's coming. I need to know what is happening. Dragons are exciting. I'm excited to see with the, was it Mox Jasper being add one mana of any color, dragon you control.
Are you excited for another $100 zero mana artifact?
Oh my gosh. No.
Crazy.
To be honest with you, no. But interesting. It'll be interesting as well, though. We've seen a lot of this, what I would call modern power creep. A power level that is largely associated with the modern format eking its way into Standard. And seeing cards at such a powerful level that they're already not only just being played in Standard, but they're being played in Pioneer, they're being played in Modern, they're being played, let's say, in Highlander as well. Stock Up being a really cool example of this, which is a 3-mana Scry 5 draw 2. It's really good. And there's this, it's a power level that is, for lack of a better term, creeping up. And Standard is getting this incredible boost and this, like, surge of strength in the format. And it's really cool to see a format like Standard take on kind of the archetypal power of Modern, so to speak. But it's also a little bit startling.
Definitely. I was talking to a couple of Australian Highlander players and they were joking, but there is a really interesting dynamic in that format at the moment. And for those who don't know, Australian Highlander is an eternal format that uses all the cards in Magic, and you can pay a certain number of points to play certain powerful cards like Black Lotus or Time Walk. But what they were saying was all the best non-creature spells are from Magic's long, long history. And all the best creatures are from the last 12 months. That power creep in terms of just, like, card text on body is massive. And it was a very intentional design decision by Wizards. There's a whole article from Mark Rosewater about it. But I don't know. I'm a high synergy gamer, so I am happy for a little bit of power creep in my Standard format.
Look, they're not going to reprint Time Walk ever, but they are going to.
No, they're not allowed.
But they are going to print Nethergoyf.
Sure.
And that's just one of the many examples of recent cards that are just so good.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
And so I need to know what's next.
Yeah, my friends and I, we did a thought experiment. We were like, how, like, in creating an homage to Siege Rhino, what would it have to have been in order to be as ubiquitous in Standard today as it was back in Khans of Tarkir Standard and Dragons of Tarkir Standard, where I'm not sure if you're aware, the entire format was either mono-red or these Abzan Sea Drino mirrors. And it actually devolved into, like, these Abzan Whip of Erebos recur your Sea Drino nonsense decks, which were very, very cool. But the funny thing is we were like, I think what you would have to do is leave it identical and remove one generic mana. I think it would just have to be a 3-mana 4/5 that Lightning Helixes you. Which is insane. The fact that that is the, like, the fact that Siege Rhino is probably not good enough for Standard today is crazy.
Yeah.
It was one of the most broken creatures of all time for a long, long time. You played it in Modern. You wanted to play Birthing Pod so you could pod away your creature and put a rhino into play. It's insane. I'm excited for Tarkir. I don't know whether you can tell.
Yeah, just a little bit.